You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
. 7:56 on a Tuesday morning. Mike McNamara with you. We continue. And so let me very publicly, Woody, apologize for being late this morning. All right. Well, I needed to get that on record to apologize publicly so we could move forward and you didn't smoke me. I got a number of emails about an article written by Captain Lauren Finch Serrano.
Mm-hmm.
When did that article come out?
So that appears in the July 2017 Gazette. Title is To Get Out or Not to Get Out.
And then the subtitle, Gender Crisis in the Marine Corps. Okay, so we'll talk about that here as we talk about the July issue. So first of all, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, Chris Woodbridge, retired colonel, heavy hearts today that everybody goes to work in the extended family of the Marine Corps. C-130 crash, and it doesn't happen very often. Any thoughts on that?
It's it's any time we have a mishap, a Class A fatality in particular, it is like a death in the family. Certainly, my heart's got to go out to those Marines, to the squadron that they came from, or squadrons they came from, and of course to their loved ones. It's a tragedy and a great loss to all of us every time this happens, and particularly when it's a mass casualty event like this. It's a true shock to the system, and we need to work our way through it as we know how to do.
All right, let's talk about the. I have one other current event question. Have you seen this issue of this staff sergeant or sergeant first class army type who declared his allegiance and said he would kill soldiers and whatnot?
This is out at Schofield Barracks in Hawaii. Soldier, I believe his name was. Ikaika Kong.
Right. So let me ask you this. You're a colonel, so that means you're a smart guy. He gets his clearance taken away in 2012 because of his pro-Islamic state statements and his threats to other, while on duty, his threats to kill other service members. How do you come back from that one, Colonel?
I'll tell you, I'm going off of the same public open source reporting as you are. I don't have any detailed insight of any other information that is proprietary to the Army or to the FBI, who had been brought in by the Department of the Army to essentially investigate this individual and run an undercover or sting type operation on him. I'm not privy to any of that information.
So you're not going to defend the Army on this?
That's what I'm trying
to get you to do. So.
I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to defend anybody. But I am going to say that there is a fine line out there sometimes, and in this case, from what we're reading, again, open source media, it looks like that. That fine line was pretty well crossed, but there are, and we've seen this sort of thing unfortunately happen in the past, where an individual service member's religious or political beliefs start to trend towards the radicalized or the extreme, and in sometimes a misplaced degree of caution over the rights of the individual, the institution does not take appropriate action. So you know, you've got to balance protecting the rights of the individual to freedom of religion, freedom of speech, etc. However, you know, when there is clear indicators of particularly threats of violence against, you know, oneself or others, you know, that has to be taken seriously. And it sounds like it was, again, just from the reporting, it sounds like it was clearance or access removed, clearances removed, investigation initiated, and then an investigation turned over from the military agency to the federal law enforcement side. And it sounds like that worked. But again, you know, when you look back at something like the Fort Hood shooting and Dr. Nadal,
right.
Some of the same sorts of warning signs were there. And again, in an abundance of, respecting individual freedoms, sometimes the institution does not take the appropriate corrective or defensive action, and that can lead down right. It sounds to me, honestly, again, not defending anybody here because I don't have all the facts or access to verified information. This may have in fact worked because the individual was rolled up and caught. So.
Well, you know what, I agree with you, but, and again, I will caveat my calloused comments with this. Again, open source stuff, we don't know. But I just don't know how this goes in front of the Forest Preservation Council for them to adjudicate. It's, to me, you don't come back from sympathizing with Japan or saying Hitler's a cool guy, I'm down with Hitler, and if you don't like it, I'll smoke you and anybody who's against the fatherland. How do we send you to therapy for that? And then keep you, it's a head scratcher.
So I'm with you. I think the subtle differences, while those views, you know, are egregious, they're not necessarily affiliated with a faith group or religious beliefs. When they are, it can get into that gray area of freedom of religion, individual rights, etc. And so there's kind of a fine line there at times. It sounds to me like in this case, the fine line was well and truly crossed. The Army was taking appropriate action, but for whatever reason may have seen or there may have been a decision of increased value to allowing this individual to essentially be tracked and subjected to that undercover operation by federal law enforcement in order to A, catch the individual in a genuine crime, and B, potentially expose more of that network. So there's, a little bit of gray area there.
Yeah,
and again,
you're chartering the black helicopter. That's awesome. It's a head shaker. And I used to do this when I sat on Forest Preservation Council. And you look at somebody's personal problems and you look around the table and you say, do we honestly believe that we have the time and the assets to therapy this person back to being a full up round Marine? Do we believe that? And it's almost like we become like a social organization that we have a mission to rehab people. We have a war fighting mission. And if you can't do that, and if you can't get back to, you know, to some position of war fighting to support that, then we don't need you. We'll get somebody else to do your job. So if you think that you might want to switch sex, okay, that's fine, you know, but you need to go away because that's going to be years before you're deployable again. And that's not our commitment to the American people. I don't know. It just seems to me like I hear these things and I'm thinking, this is crazy talk. That's not what we do. Yet it seems like more and more, like this guy even staying in the military after that, To me, he should have been NJP'd and you know, given some type of discharge commensurate with his comments. How you rehab him, what process you put him through, is to me is pretty crazy. And even if it is religious based, doesn't matter to me. That's a line that you to threaten your coworkers is not something that we do. So just my thoughts. That's worthy of a Gazette theme there, Woodbridge. Just so you know, I'm not trying to do your job for you. I'm just saying. Let's talk about this month's edition of the Gazette, and I appreciate your comments. So, I just shook my head when I read it this morning. Anywho, the Marine Corps Gazette, July 2017, volume.
Well, before you go on to that, let me just you pole vaulted around a few different issues there. We pole vaulted from a case of Islamic associated or identified radicalized individual communicating threats, etc. In that particular case, I again, without all the information, I don't know how much rehabilitation was actually being done vice a setup in order to use that individual to exploit a network, or at least to catch that individual in a indictable offense by federal law enforcement. That's, you know, so there's one example. You cited an example of people expressing either Nazi white supremacist tendencies or siding with a historical adversary. I think those are that's a separate category of crazy. That can and will and be dealt with and can't necessarily, again, given policies on membership in hate groups, is not something that we're going to rehabilitate. And then you brought in the issue of transgender service members, which is an entirely separate issue, again, governed under policy that presents its own challenges,
right,
as you correctly pointed out, in terms of the time for, treatment, transition, et cetera. If in fact the service is going to permit the member to go down that road, which is a very long road.
Right.
So three kind of issues there.
Wow, what are you? You just like got your X-Acto knife out and dissected them all. I'm very impressed this morning. You're on your game. I'm out there like slinging it around with my wide brush, and you're just like, wait, Mac, hold on, let me educate everybody about this. So well done.
You did give me some extra time this morning.
All right.
July issue.
on the July issue. Now that we've covered, anyway.
An interesting tie-in there, though, and this is again just the way the magazine kind of laid out in July. I'd almost be concerned a little bit that this is an article that folks might not necessarily read or skip over unless they're a true cover-to-cover reader and member of the association. But the last article in this month's print issue is by Captain Kelly Candies. It's entitled Protecting the Force. And it's actually an article that criticizes federal policy, DOD policy, on service members being allowed to open carry privately owned firearms on installations, as part of that, in the author's perspective, as part of that first line of defense against an active shooter. So interesting potential linkage there.
Interesting is right. The now I'm curious, so I'm looking at it right now. Mm-hmm. It is. What is that saying? An armed society is a polite society?
Absolutely.
And, I think we all bristled at the events that happened in Nashville to think that, these Marines are running from somebody with a weapon and that they don't have the means to defend themselves. And what do we do if this happens again? And I think you and I both know there's a lot of Marines that they don't wait for somebody to tell them to carry a weapon. Okay. They may not, they don't talk about it, but they have if they're out and about and there is any level of concern for their safety, and especially in light of what happened in Nashville, nobody has to say a word to them. They're, you know, and so it's an interesting little discussion that you have about physically protecting the force like that. So.
Oh, you're right, and yeah, I agree with you. You completely have a lot of Marines out there who understand exactly what their first and foremost their rights are under the Second Amendment of the Constitution. Also understand and abide by local law in their state or municipality. But what is overlaid on that is federal law and DOD policy regarding restrictions on your right to open carry firearms on federal installations. So that's where the author takes issue. You know, who better and who better trained in many ways to you know, be part of that that first line of defense.
Interesting. All right, is there a theme to the July edition?
Oh, absolutely. It's probably almost half of the magazine is themed and focused on leadership issues.
I love that.
You know, as I say in my editorial, you know, leadership is something that we experience from day one as Marines, as either a leader or one of the led. We experience many different types of leadership, which has given us our own vocabulary, from combat leadership to toxic leadership to eyeball leadership. We've got a whole language out there. Again, fully half of the content this month talks about leadership or leadership-related issues.
All right, so let's talk about that because it is it's a favorite topic, certainly of mine.
Every Marine has strong opinions.
You know, do you know Alex Morgan, former PAO, married to Matt Morgan, who produced the Unknown Flagraiser? Selling best author, runs a leadership consulting business now. She says, you know, Mac, Marines don't realize it, but they have been a part of the greatest leadership academy on the planet. There's nobody that does leadership, teaches it, immerses the culture in it like the Marine Corps. She said, and I've seen the other branches, they do a good job, but nobody has an academy that you have, the kind of leadership that gets taught that the Marine Corps does. Your thoughts on that, Chris?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, we are fundamentally a people-based organization. The combat power of the Marine Corps comes from people. You really do have two uniformed services that really primarily generate their combat power that way, the Marine Corps and the Army. We have other services whose essential contribution is very platform-centric, the Air Force and the Navy. The fact is that from day one, we teach formally. We teach leadership. We do practical application from day one. Putting Marines in charge of each other, that peer leadership challenge that we discussed the last time I was on.
You bet.
We think about leadership. We write about leadership throughout the ranks because we experience it daily. Again, on one end of the equation or the other, and that's why I say there's really no shortage of ideas, opinions. And observations based on experience. From my perspective as the editor of the Gazette, there is no shortage of input on that topic. Again, it is so common to all Marines, and I think there's some really strong examples of just how powerful that leadership academy is. I would point to the number of senior Marine leaders who were selected and confirmed into some of the highest departmental positions in this country right now. I think that that is a testament to our ability, the service's ability, to develop people into leaders. And we do that, as I said, through instruction, formal, informal, practical application, and we test it in the most strict and unforgiving classroom that there is, and that's combat.
I like when we agree. Talk about first of all, just a, kind of a stylistic note. Very colorful. Very colorful cover. Is that by design or is it, it looks graphically to be, I don't know how I would say it. How should I say it? It looks graphically to be a little bit different.
We took an image from Training Command. It's a Marine Corps combat visual information guys, the Tavis artist's product there, and I think I can't claim authorship of it, obviously, but it's something that I thought we'd use on this month's cover. Number one, it is an attention grabber, and it will resonate with Marines because it is the current focus from CMC on down. Campaign to protect what you've earned, to influence folks' decision making at every level of the chain of command.
Okay. All right. So the theme is leadership. The theme is protect what you've earned. What is the actual theme of the month?
It's a leadership issue. Okay. You've got, among other articles, you've got the winners, the first, second, and third place winners of the annual Hogaboom Essay Contest,
right,
which is the leadership essay contest. Those appear in those are the first three articles in the magazine. And then we have a variety of other leadership-specific articles, some folks offering their nuances or their proposed changes to our your tried and true leadership traits, leadership principles, etc. We've got some related areas as well. Challenges that leaders will face, everything from historical challenges of firsthand observations from General Traynor on the latter days of the Korean War, fighting in the Central Highlands of the Korean Peninsula along the DMZ in 1952 to 53 period. Very relevant when you look at some of the threats facing us today. Focusing on that threat that is facing so many of our veterans and service members. We've got two articles on suicide prevention.
Okay.
This month, again, a very tie into that overall leadership challenge theme.
Got it. Talk to me about give me a couple articles. I want you to, what is the premise of Get Out or Not to Get Out by?
So that's Captain Lauren Fish Serrano's article entitled "To Get Out or Not to Get Out."
Right.
So very interesting article. As we all know, the Marine Corps is majority male. We are a male organization. We have a percentage of female Marines. The challenges that they face in some cases are different from what male Marines will face. And this article gives some insight into those challenges and pressures that really, I would say, female career-level Marines who are facing that decision as to whether they're going to stay in for 20 years or longer, or whether they're gonna leave the service prior to that time, the pressures that can influence that decision, and how that can affect the their decision to stay or to go. Main reason for publishing that is really in order to provide a resource to frankly, to male leaders who may not consider those pressures, whether they be, and most of this, much of the pressure centers around the conflict of having a 20-year career in the service, in the Marine Corps in particular, which comes with its own bills to pay, deployments, separations, et cetera, and the pressures to have a family, and how that tension very, very seriously affects the decisions of these really, really career-level Marines. Giving some insight on that to, again, what is a predominantly male-dominated leadership who may not understand, whether they have families or not, understand these pressures from that perspective.
Got it. The all right, give me a couple. Give me one more thing to read in this month's Gazette, and then give me something to read in the online version.
The let's see. So right now, I would tell you we've got another really good commentary on Marines United. This one coming from a corporal who's currently on security guard duty, posted overseas. Very good focus on our core values as a potential source for changing some behavior, changing some habits of thought to change that culture that resulted in or contributed to what went on with the Facebook group Marines United. So I've got to give a shout out to Corporal Galera.
Can I? I have yet to see anything else about the investigation other than the onesies and twosies that have been prosecuted by the Marine Corps. I have yet to see total numbers. Have you seen any more total numbers in terms of active duty participation in this stupidity?
No. The most recent update was sentencing on one Marine that had been convicted, but nothing more on overall numbers
and
from
so,
my end.
And again, so trying to get our hands around this, how many people actually participated in this behavior? You know, so we can get some sense of how widespread it was and as this investigation continues. So I just wondered if I had missed something. So. All right. Give me an article in the give me another article in the print version and then one in the online version.
Let's see. So on the print side, also need to and you're going to see a some of this is a little bit of coming attractions as well.
We're okay with that.
Yeah. So you've got the first part of an article by an artillery officer on cyberspace operations and electronic warfare. Part one is at page 67 in this month's issue. Part two will be coming out in August, and there's also going to be a group of about five articles to include one by Brigadier General Krall, the director of C4 for the Marine Corps, on C4 and cyber issues coming up in the August issue as well. The other thing I got to point out in the July print edition, and obviously all of this content is available online as well, is our monthly book review. So this month's book review is by General Butch Neal, his memoir entitled "What Now, Lieutenant." And this is not your typical kind of memoir. It's a series of biographical vignettes, but they all center on really leadership development decisions, being in that hard spot of what now, insert rank, from experiences in Vietnam as a lieutenant, artillery forward observer, all the way up through four-star assistant commandant of the Marine Corps. I'm sure you As a Boston guy, I'm sure you you know General Neil, or at least know of him.
I just heard him singled out in a I had that video, that Zinni video, digitized, and I'll send you a link in, so that you'll have it. But he mentioned General Neil. He said, I just graduated from Villanova. I'm here at the basic school. Butch Neil and I are going down to Fredericksburg and hanging out with Mary Washington girls every weekend. Life was good. And then he talks about something happened. General Van Riper was down in Santo Domingo doing some stuff, and then Vietnam got on the horizon. And I thought, maybe Zinni, you ought to take a look at this stuff for a second. And so, no, General Zinni and Lieutenant Zinni and Lieutenant Neil, obviously running mates. So just heard his name the other day. But along and then most noted for among non-Marines, he was the face of what, Desert Storm?
That's exactly right. He was the really the spokesman as part of the J3 for General Schwarzkopf at CENTCOM during Desert Storm. And, remembering back, he talked about media. These were the early days of CNN. For people that were just starting to get sucked in by that 24-hour news cycle, General Neil was the spokesman for U.S. Central Command and did a phenomenal job at that. Remarkable man, remarkable officer. I've been fortunate to work with him twice. Actually, after he had retired, I worked with him when he was doing senior mentoring with both the MACTAF staff training program in the Marine Corps and then later at Joint Forces Command as part of the Joint Force. And learned a lot from the general. And this book, I think, gives a really good resource to younger Marines, junior officers and younger Marines to look at how those key moments, life experiences, develop someone as a leader and as a Marine. And it's one of the reasons we reviewed it. And in August, for those who are in the Quantico area, the general is going to come and do a book signing with us. If folks want to come and get an autograph from General Butch Neil, former Assistant Commandant of the Marine Corps.
That group of officers, pretty incredible. Their young years in Vietnam were pretty amazing years.
That goes across the services. Right. Some great books out there, Nightingale Song, right. Boys of 67, some great books about that that generation of officers, many of whom, Schwarzkopf, Colin Powell, General Pace, General Jones, former commandant, General Krulak, who came out of that crucible of late 60s Vietnam, really carried lessons with them, many to the highest ranks in the joint services. So a lot of the lessons of Vietnam were carried on the shoulders of those officers.
All right, then that is this month's book review, yes?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
And how about online content? Something we'll see there?
So online, when you go out onto our website, and this might be a little bit of help in kind of navigating for folks, you'll see on the Gazette page, every week a couple of articles will post up there that are free content. You can go ahead and whether you're a paying member of the association, you can read those, and non-members who go to the website and want to freeload all of what all of us members are paying for can also read those articles. We're featuring one regarding the future of the Marine Corps, it's really by retired Lieutenant Colonel John Arsenault, really kind of questions what the role of the Marine Corps should be in future, and then also our monthly tactical decision game is up there, which is really the about the sixth part in a series of tactical decision games that have been running since February.
What else? Anything else about this month's issue that you would tell me? Hey, Mac, make sure you read this one.
One other article I'll highlight, and that's reserve integration at page 50. It's we are gratefully, you know, seeing more articles from reserve component Marines coming in. There is actually a writing contest underway right now that Commander Marine Forces Reserve, Lieutenant General McMillan, has endorsed. A question about maintaining readiness in the reserves to get his Marines from the reserve component to write on that issue. Got some prize money associated with it coming from both the Reserve Association and the MCANF. And, you know, kind of priming that pump a little bit, we published a piece by Captain Andrew Bender about integration of reserves into training exercises as a routine readiness measure. So another good piece there.
All right. Email question. Mac, I'm curious. I enjoy when Chris comes on. Any books that he's personally read lately that he would recommend?
Absolutely. So I'm gonna recommend a book on books, and we'll actually be we're gonna be reviewing this and also including some other material about professional reading in an upcoming issue, likely in the December issue, as people are starting to think about what to buy their Marine as a gift. Books are always a good gift to give folks. So this book is called The Leader's Bookshelf. It's actually written by Admiral Stavridis. And it is a study there's really kind of two parts to it that are valuable. It has a kind of an overview of what I would call the core books that all professional officers, whether they be naval service, service writ general, or services writ large, professional officers, leaders should have on their bookshelf. And each of those books is not reviewed, but sort of summarized. I'm not going to say they're like Cliff Notes or Spark Notes, but it does kind of get you to the you know, the key points and some information about the author on a series of books that are really the core of a professional library. And then it also, and this is very insightful, gives you some examples of notable officers, professional libraries, from George S. Patton to General Mattis, Secretary Mattis, what their professional library looks like. So really good book as a guide to professional reading that certainly could augment our Commandant's professional reading list. And so, again, a little bit of a teaser, coming attraction,
yeah,
in an upcoming issue. We're going to review that book and talk a little more about professional reading as well.
All right. How about your favorite book? If I asked you your favorite read of all time, you can only recommend one to me. What is it? Yeah, how about that? You want to hear mine?
Sure.
Fehrenbach, This Kind of War.
I mean, it's a great book, absolutely. And I've read it. I don't know that I would put that down as my
favorite. Don't be condescending with me. It's my book. Okay, that's the way it is. No, you know what? One thing.
No, I'm not being condescending at all. I'm just still hung up on the first question. I mean, wow, that's a tough one for me.
You know what? One of the things I loved about Fehrenbach's book is, you know, it chronicles, you know, institutional discipline in the Marine Corps. And how it, you know, the Army was talking about all kinds of different reforms, flat rank structure, and the Marine Corps never wavered from what it's historically saw it through dark days, and ultimately would see it through some of its darkest days, which is the encirclement of the 1st Marine Division at the Chosin Reservoir. which to me is the greatest moments in Marine Corps history, happen in its darkest days. And you see the proof of its commitment to discipline and how that pays benefits on the battlefield. And I think those lessons are timeless. And so for that reason, it's one of my favorites. So anyway, so I've given you all that time. I've stalled for you all that time, Woody, so that you could come up with one recommendation. Okay, what
one recommendation? All right, I'm going to make a recommendation. I'm going to caveat this by saying this is probably my favorite book that I read as a junior officer, kind of developing along the way. And that's Once an Eagle by Anton Meyer.
Mm.
And the reason I say that is because it keeps coming up. And it happened just by happenstance. It came up with me this morning, talking with some folks as I was getting a haircut, which I still do after retirement.
Nice. Not as often.
And more stylish. But the fact is that book, you know, it's fiction, but
right.
it's based on iconic personalities,
right.
And the development of those officer personalities. And as I kind of grew up in the Marine Corps, it just kept getting proven true,
right.
Over and over and over again. And, the fellow I was talking with this morning, is you read it and you reread it and you keep wishing it would end differently, but it never does. And in some ways that's true of life and true of life with some of our leaders.
Right.
So throw that out there.
Interesting. Since we're talking liberal arts stuff, here's another email. Mac, give me two leaders and please ask Colonel Woodbridge to do the same, that he would love to sit down and speak with for a given period of time. Two leaders.
And any leaders, living leaders? I mean, this, you know, that kind of...
any living or dead.
Wow.
We can
any living or dead.
Exactly. We can extract them, animate them. You can have a conversation with them. So, yeah, living or dead.
Wow. Okay. Napoleon.
Napoleon. Really?
Absolutely. And
you speak French?
Oui, bien sûr.
Whoa! Where the hell did that come from?
Yeah, I speak pretty poor French.
All right. Give me a
but
second.
Give me a while, and I'll work on it.
Give me a second one.
Another leader, living or dead, I think. I think I would put the second one.
My number one would be Lee.
Hmm.
I want to know what he was thinking at Gettysburg.
That's
and then you know we can
very narrow.
We can hop.
You know, I think
we can hop in the car and drive up there. Okay, so what were you thinking right here? I'd also like to talk to Custer and have that discussion. What were you thinking, George, when you rode up this valley with 10,000 Sioux warriors in it? And you know, and it's not like you saw initial indications and went, "Whoa!" You went, "No, let's go, boys." What were you thinking? You were just off that day. You know, your scouts had already told you what was up ahead. So he's one of those guys. I'd like to talk to Magellan. Did you really think it was flat, or were you okay with that? I'd like to talk to Martin Luther. What were you thinking when the Catholic Church rules the planet and you go nail your list to the front door? Were you trying to get in trouble? Are you that guy? So I'd like to interview him. I would like to interview Holland Smith. Just to talk about,
you know, that
decisions.
And that name popped in my mind too. I wouldn't mind interviewing General Smith. on a good day. by all accounts, I'd like to get him on a good day.
No, you want him on a bad day when he's just snapping and pissed. but you brought him back from the dead, so it's like, look, General, you better cool your ass because you can go right back in the can right now as soon as I'm done with you.
God, that just opens an awful lot up. Yeah. I'll tell you, if I was going to go with Napoleon, I would also want to interview Washington, George Washington, because there's so much about his individual character, much of which has become legendary.
Right.
You know, it's become kind of the realm of myth and stories, but so much in his character shaped the
nation,
the government of this nation. And the relationship of the military to civil authority in this nation. And I'd love to talk to him. Napoleon, I would love to talk to because much of, almost 200 years of study of strategy, tactics, the art of war, centers around how did he do what he did? And, how do we make average people, capable of thinking and making tactical decisions, strategic decisions, the way he did. I go, but you know what? If you can start raising the dead, gosh, I mean, Evans Carlson, was he really a communist or just posing as one for a while?
Right.
Edson, Bazelone, Kelly Turner, some of the.
How about Chesty Puller? Who was I talking to?
Nimitz. I would love to sit down with Nimitz.
How about Spruance? Who's the one that pulled the ships off of Guadalcanal? Was that Spruance?
Ernest King, I think.
It's like, really? What were you thinking?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember now. Should know that, you know.
We
blame the Navy for it enough to this day.
So. Oh, my God. It's what we love to do. All right. Now, a final couple of questions for you in this wide-ranging interview that we've done today. During the surrender, okay, that took place, VJ Day, okay, and the week before that, representatives from the nation of Japan flew to Manila to meet with the staff of Douglas MacArthur. So here's a true or false question. Every person that they encountered other than the principals was by design 6'3" or taller. True or false?
Anecdotally true. And the same for the party on board, I believe it was in Missouri,
right,
for signing the instrument of surrender.
Right.
They were all huge, huge specimens.
All the short guys, get out of here.
Deliberately.
To communicate in every image that was transmitted around the world. Who was in charge?
Yep.
Now, next question. I won't make it so easy this time. Give me the approximate number that were in the flyover. Before the flyover, give me the approximate number of naval vessels in Tokyo Bay, American type, that day. Approximate.
Probably more than we have in the Navy right now.
263 with the carriers offshore just in case they change their mind. And final trivia question for you. I should do this more often because I'm enjoying this. Approximately how many aircraft were in the flyover?
Oh, gosh, 500? I have no idea.
So you'll laugh your ass off. Between 1,500 and 2,000.
Well, you know, when you're when you want to make sure someone knows their beat, and two atomic bombs may not have been enough. Those are a few techniques to do that.
I was laying watching something on the Smithsonian Channel about the final days of Japan. I love the Smithsonian Channel, by the way. The quality of work they do and the imagery they use is awesome. I highly recommend it. and they said that almost fell off the couch. 1,500 planes, between 1,500 and 2,000 planes participated in the flyover. And I just started laughing. I thought, you've got to be kidding me. What did that look like? The sky was black with planes. Okay, final question comes from an emailer. Mac, since you're doing trivia, is that Amelia Earhart? Did the Japanese have her when she died?
I'm sure they're referring to the History Channel.
Right.
History Channel special that was
Sunday night.
I did not see it. I saw some coming attractions, so I'm not going to answer that question.
You're a colonel, though. Come on, you can have an opinion. Right?
I'm on my opinion. I didn't watch it, and I don't know.
You're a senator in the Marine Corps, okay? We know that little pitch. So you're being a restrained senator. I say yes, the Japanese had her, and she died in Japanese
custody. Did you see the special?
No, God no. I was out doing something. Do you think I saw the picture? I saw the picture, Woody.
Okay, I didn't even really get a clear look at the picture, so I wouldn't. But it points to some not necessarily new evidence, but evidence that may not have been seen before. So I would not say it's impossible. I'd like to. I'm certainly going to try to get a hold of that that special and see it. And it reminds me very much of the recent work that was done on the flag raising photos on Iwo Jima.
Right.
You know, new technology, new techniques to not just verify specific images, but to build the context around those images to try to get a better picture of the truth.
And you know, it's interesting. In the preview I saw, it talked about the forensics evidence, much like the unknown flag raiser did, using a picture and taking the kind of, maybe it might be an image of a forearm, using it and measuring it and then being able to kind of transpose that into maybe a skeleton. And in this case, they used it in terms of there was a picture of her in a bathing suit. Evidently she was a swimmer, before, you know, a couple of years before she left. And then, they took that picture of the width of her shoulders and they said, without a doubt, our forensics tell us that that is Amelia Earhart, based on multiple measurements of her body. That is her, which is pretty interesting. But as you alluded to, exactly the same forensic techniques using images that were used in the unknown flag raiser. So,
pretty interesting. I gotta try to catch that. You mentioned the Smithsonian Channel. We helped them. We helped them out. There's a show they do, a series called Weapons Hunter. We helped them out with some imagery of Corporal Stein's Stinger machine gun.
If you haven't seen that, if you haven't seen that episode of the Stinger, it's what this guy does to put the Stinger together. He has to go to different collectors, asking them to either borrow or have pieces of their collections. And it's fascinating. And and Tony Stein's story, if you've never read it, Google it. His Medal of Honor citation is absolutely incredible.
So motivating.
Unbelievable. and I'll tell you what, and that weapon, holy shit. That thing, yeah, it was awesome. And I've told people, let me tell you, regardless of the what they do on a monthly basis, the archives that the Gazette has alone are worth the membership. The reservoir of leadership writing, of images, of things done right after the battles that were fought. And I don't care if you're talking about Kaesong, anything that you want to research in the Marine Corps, you can find guys that were there using pronouns like I, we, he, not they, and at the time. That's not the way these things get written. Absolutely fascinating stuff. And obviously the Smithsonian Channel availing itself of your unique talents, Woody.
I appreciate the plug.
Oh, no, no. I'll tell you what. I mean, it's, if I was you, I wouldn't get a whole lot of work done. I'd be like back in the archives going through the old pictures and stuff like that. Look at this Chesty Puller drinking in Madrid. Unbelievable. Wow. How did he get his cover on backwards? I'd be like, I would be into all those pictures. Yeah.
The Instagram of the 20th, early 20th century.
Exactly. All right. Sir, first of all, thank you very much for the visit today. And, tell everybody, if you're not a member, where do they go to become members of first of all, not only to subscribe to the Gazette, but also there's a broader reason to be a part of the Marine Corps Association. So tell them where they go to find it.
So receiving the Gazette either digitally or in print is a benefit of membership in the Marine Corps Association and Foundation. The best place to get there is go to your handy dandy internet, Google Marine Corps Association Foundation. Our website will come up. It's www.mcanf.org, and you can get to our website that way, and there'll be a tab on membership. Right now, $35 for a year member. Year membership gets you 1 year and access to both Gazette and Leatherneck online, and one magazine of your choice in print. And so you can do that pretty simply over the internet.
The one and only Chris Woodbridge. Woody, thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks, Mac. We'll talk soon.
All right, there you have it. Likes to stay in his lane. He's a colonel. Senators of the Marine Corps. Yeah. Now I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing or a bad thing given the behavior of senators these days. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. Mike Musselman joins us next. More of All Marine Radio coming at you. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled machine anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.